This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's Stand Up or Standing Trees Enviro Show. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I'm not in the studio with...
This is Glenn Ayers.
Yes, and Glenn, as you know, obviously many people in D.C. have gone over the cliff into the MAGA pit of delusion and hate. They represent, so, I don't know, 30% or so of the U.S. population. But some of them may have realized the error of their way. Regardless, the rest of us are here and many of us are standing up and fighting back. Chris Gish, community organizer at Standing Trees, joins us to talk about building resistance to MAGA's war on nature. So, how about a quote of the week? So moving on, let's see about our good old Enviro Show quote of the week. This is in keeping with our guest and Green Mountain National Forest, presently under threat. Quote, we must protect the forest for our children, grandchildren, and children yet to be born. We must protect the forest for those who can't speak for themselves, such as the birds, animals, fish, and trees. And that was the hereditary chief, Edward Moody, of the Nuxalt Nation. Quatsinus is his name. And that's about it. That should take us to our interview, Glenn.
Yeah, so we'll talk with Chris Gish from Standing Trees and fill you in on all the activism that's happening around the Green Mountain National Forest in Vermont. But a lot of what we'll talk about also is pertinent to the entire New England forest situation, where we find ourselves increasingly up against the bureaucracy in the state and federal government that are just hell-bent on destroying forests during this time of climate emergency. So let's get into that interview, and then we can say a little bit more on the other side. So today on the Enviro Show, we are joined by Chris Gish. And Chris led the hike a few weeks ago up to North Pond near the Chittenden Reservoir in Vermont. And that was a really nice hike through a very mature forested area, very much in the Green Mountain National Forest and an area that's known as Telephone Gap, which we've talked about on past shows. And this is an area that the U.S. Forest Service, the Green Mountain National Forest, has decided to go in and do commercial logging in. So that was kind of the purpose of the hike up there. But first, I want to introduce Chris to our listeners. And Chris, you can do a better job of introducing yourself. But welcome to the Enviro Show. Tell us all about the group that you work with and your role there, and about Standing Trees.
Thanks, Glenn. And thanks for joining us on that hike a few weeks ago at the end of July. It was amazing to meet you and always amazing to get out there, but also sad and sobering to walk through these forests that are on the chopping block. But I'm Chris Gish. I work for Standing Trees as a community organizer. And Standing Trees, we are a New England-wide nonprofit group devoted to advocating for our public lands. So protecting and restoring wild forests across our treasured public lands in New England. And my role with Standing Trees, I do all kinds of communications and organizing work. So everything from sending out emails to and all kinds of communication to leading hikes, doing research, kind of the whole gamut. We're a staff of two right now. So I think we have to all be, each of us have to be jack of all trades. And then Standing Trees really at the heart is volunteer based, and we're just here to facilitate that. And then a little bit more about me. I grew up in central Vermont and now live in northern Vermont. Have had some of the most meaningful experiences of my life in our public lands in New England. hiking in the whites and the greens, even in the Appalachian Trail in Massachusetts. So truly love all these areas and just want to see the best for them.
Chris, we have previously had Zach Porter on the Enviro Show, and Zach's the executive director of Standing Trees. And I really think Zach's a great guy. I met you once, as you said, and you seem like a good person as well. But I know Zach has a long history in wildlands protection. You used to work for the Wilderness Society, I think. And so what's your background in conservation or, you know, education, science, anything like that in your background?
Yeah, I have a much different background than Zach. Zach worked for, and Zach has been an amazing mentor in this work at Standing Trees. I know Zach worked for Montana Wild for 10 years for the Northeast Wilderness Trust here in New England and other conservation groups. And my working background is as a farm worker, actually. So I studied ecology and agriculture at the University of Vermont, and then was a farm worker for 10 years, mostly vegetable farms, but kind of the whole gamut, both in Vermont and out west. And while I was doing that, I was doing as much environmentally related volunteer work as I can, including working to retire the McNeil biomass burning plant in Vermont, which is Vermont's largest carbon polluter, and kind of it liquidates the equivalent of 8 to 10% of Vermont's entire annual tree growth every year and puts it out the stack directly into the atmosphere as carbon pollution. So got involved in that, met Zach through that, and then transitioned to this work for wildlands protection, just kind of seeing in my work as a farm worker how much all of our livelihoods depend on functioning natural places and the ecosystem services we all hear talked about. Like, those aren't abstract or out in the ether for people like farm workers. Like, where I lived last year, flooded twice the year before I moved there. I've worked with plenty of other farms that have flooded. In where I lived in Montana, we had to evacuate from a wildfire that was only a couple miles away, and just seeing all these impacts to really core things that all of us depend on, like having enough food to eat and letting our forests grow old and wild and letting nature have space to be, is one of the simplest and most immediate and compelling things we can do to sustain not only our own society, but all of our other more than human kin. So that's what drew me into this work and looking for a way to get more directly involved.
And I know recently the effort has been, Standing Trees has been focused on the Green Mountain and White Mountain National Forest. And we've talked about that on previous shows, but also a bit on state forest land. And personally, I'm an activist here in Massachusetts, very focused on state forest land, state-owned lands, because we don't have any national forest here in Massachusetts. But we do have a lot of state-owned forests that are also being commercially logged. And most of the trees that are cut down on state-owned lands are being chipped and burned in various biomass burning incinerators, mostly in New Hampshire and some maybe in Vermont. But, you know, we've talked about that extensively, the biomass debacle. We call it biomass. And so I'm glad to hear that you were active with trying to shut down that carbon spewing monstrosity up in Burlington. It's just an outrage that something like that, they call themselves 100% renewable, clean, green energy, and nothing could be further from the truth. But let's get back to Standing Trees and, you know, what you're currently working on. I went on the hike to the Telephone Gap area. Can you give us an update on Telephone Gap, and then maybe what the next steps are associated with forest protection that you're working on?
Yeah, happily. I'd be happy to give you a rundown on kind of what's happening in both the Green Mountain National Forest, the White Mountain National Forest, and the state lands realms that Standing Trees is working on, which primarily is in Vermont right now. But I would encourage everyone to check out the Massachusetts Wildlands Campaign, because there's some excellent work going on in Massachusetts to better protect the state lands there. And Glenn, to your point, before we go into public lands about biomass, the biomass, that is the New England forest industry's dirty secret. We're always told that we need to keep logging, especially keep logging on public lands, because we have these timber needs that we need to meet. And if we're not meeting them here, we're going to be meeting them somewhere else, and that's going to have more environmental harm. But that's not a claim that's based in reality. And what we see here in New England is that so much of the wood that is harvested from our forests is burned one way or another. Particularly, some of it's burned to just generate kilowatts in these incredibly old, inefficient, unnecessary facilities. And that is, this doesn't need to happen. And that's the lowest hanging fruit to reducing our wood demand, reducing our impact on the climate, and making more space to more easily have wildlands. So just want to kind of make those connections between public lands and our forest in general and biomass energy. But yeah, as to what's going on in our public lands, in the Green Mountain National Forest, as Glenn said, we just saw the Telephone Gap logging project approved, which is nearly 11,000 acres of logging in the central Green Mountains, kind of on both sides of the spine, in one of the largest, oldest patches of intact forest left in Vermont. And this comes on top of four other projects of a similar size that have recently been approved by the Green Mountain National Forest. So all in all, we have about 52,000 acres of approved logging across the national forest that's in various stages of implementation. That's 52,000 acres. That would be a large amount of logging for most any national forest in the West. And here we're seeing that just in little old Vermont. And again, targeting some of our oldest forests, logging in inventoried roadless areas. So these are the areas that the Forest Service has identified as being the least developed and most wild areas in the whole national forest. And there's plans to log in roadless areas, kind of the whole gamut. And we also saw with the Telephone Gap project, we saw an unprecedented amount of public comment, over 2,300 unique comments filed on this project, which is a lot in a pretty arcane and inaccessible process. And that put a lot of pressure on the National Forest to come up with something different. And what we did, one of the most concrete things we want is an estimate of the carbon pollution that would come from this logging project. So again, just about 1/5 of the current ongoing logging that's going to be happening or is happening across the Greens. And they estimate it would release 256,000 tons of CO2. So that's kind of the scale we're looking at just for immediate climate impacts in the few places we just don't need to be logging at all. And then we're seeing the White Mountain National Forest has a different approach to get to much the same end, which is getting the cutout. And we know for a fact that this pressure has been coming from the top, from even Congress and certainly heads of national agencies to get the cutout and prioritize that over all the other benefits and uses of our national forests. Public records requests have revealed that has been the priority at least since Trump won. But in the White Mountain National Forest, they have recently had the strategy of kind of scattershot, many scattershot smaller logging projects and just rushing them through without much environmental analysis, without presenting alternatives besides a no action alternative that they don't really consider because it's clearly not what they want to do. And we've challenged a number of these projects, three projects now in court. One of the cases was heard and the decision is pending and the other one will be heard at some point. So we're facing logging all across some of the most treasured landscapes in the whites. That includes the Peabody West area, which is just downstream from the Great Gulf Wilderness along the Peabody West River, a wild and scenic, national wild and scenic eligible river. There's cutting across the Sandwich Range front, just on the edge of the Sandwich Range wilderness, the second largest wilderness in the White Mountains. And then also about 700 acres of logging that we've challenged right near Lake Tarleton in the Western White Mountains, which is an area that was added to the National Forest in the 90s, specifically to be preserved as wild, as quote unquote wilderness. And we're seeing logging there happening now. So we're challenging that and we're seeing other projects, including another 1,000-acre logging project for just south of the Kinsman and Moosilauk area that's going through its final stages of approval. So we'll be filing comments. We'll be getting out information to file your own objection about that project, the Lost River project, soon. And that's just kind of brief rundown of what's happening in the whites, combined with another active project we're keeping close tabs on is a push to expand the Waterville Valley Ski Resort. So this would entail as much as 700 plus acres of permanent ski development, 333 acres right now, and then open the door to 300-ish more acres. And this, it involves revoking protections for Canada Lynx in that area, kind of cutting in or right near Old Forest. And again, just clear cutting parts of the mountain, bulldozing ski trails, the whole gamut at a time when the ski industry may have no future, especially depending on how the very same federal agencies that we're dealing with here are acting across the nations. If our agencies are opening up our public lands to as much drilling and extraction as possible, there will be no effective climate action in the near term. And something like the ski industry in New England is doomed. We have some real questions about whether this is the best use of our public lands in this moment. That's what we're facing in the White Mountains. And then as far as state level, state lands issues, we're working hard on state level issues in Vermont, where we've been in a lot of ways advocating for a fair, open public process for how decisions are made about our state lands in Vermont. Right now, the Vermont state lands management process, frankly, it makes the federal level process, the NEPA process, look amazing by comparison, because right now we've seen the state kind of take a very ad hoc approach to public engagement and public comments. And we have filed a formal petition to try to reverse some of that and have a full, fair rulemaking process on the Worcester Range, which is one of the larger blocks of state lands in northern Vermont. And it's an essential habitat corridor between the Greens and the Northeast Kingdom. Really amazing wild place that half of it was recently opened up to future logging in a management plan. So we're trying to make sure the public has a say in that and we can do the right thing for the Worcester Range. And similarly, we're working on a much more kind of proactive, comprehensive fix to how state lands are managed in Vermont, and that's the Vermont Wildlands Act. So for the first time, this bill would make a designation in Vermont, a legal designation whereby we could durably protect our state lands. Because right now, Vermont has no framework, no statutory designation to allow us to protect something like wilderness or wild forest on state lands. In other words, a wildland. And this bill would make this designation a reality and designate about two-thirds of our state lands in Vermont. So the core state lands in the larger blocks that are ecologically irreplaceable and kind of need to be the core of any ecologically functional landscape and network of wildlands in places like Vermont or northern New England in general. And this would protect them from logging for the first time. Yeah, that was a lot, but those are some of the highlights for our federal and state level work across New England right now.
That's a lot. That's a lot, Chris. And I'm glad you went through that list because there are a lot of opportunities. And like you said, you're two people, you know, heading up this organization. So how do you do more with a very small staff? You mentioned before that it's mostly volunteers. And so how do you organize volunteers? How do you turn out that many comments on, like you said, an obscure logging project? How do you do that? How do you do the reach out? How do you get people involved in caring? I mean, you gave many reasons why we should care. And I'll say, you know, I deeply care about this stuff. My preference would be to see all of our federally owned national forest and all of our state forest, state-owned forest, turned into wilderness areas. I am a big fan of a big wilderness. And right now, I can't go to a wilderness area in Massachusetts. They don't exist. I'd have to travel up to Vermont or else go out to the Adirondacks to find wilderness, designated wilderness. And we have a program here in Massachusetts where the state has finally started putting some money towards creating forest reserves, which they claim will be off limits to logging. However, we've already had in Massachusetts here, we've had for almost 15 years, designated reserves on state lands. And it turned out that those areas were reserved by the state for logging because they're logging the reserves right now. And so I'm very leery of this term reserves. And I'm a fan of what you were talking about as some kind of a wilderness act here in Massachusetts to protect state-owned lands. But getting back to the point of how do you get people motivated and organized to take action to protect these lands that you're talking about?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. That's a question we're asking ourselves every day. But I think what we're doing, none of it is rocket science. It's trying to get the word out any way we can. So our email list is kind of our bread and butter for how we communicate the issues we're working on most at the moment. So I'd encourage anyone to go to our website in the Get Involved tab. You can take 20 seconds and sign up for our email list at standingtrees.org. But beyond that, I think just spreading the word any way we can, like face to face, at events, we try to partner with other conservation or climate focused groups whenever we can to kind of build our strength that way. And I think people do, I know I felt this way when I first woke up to public lands issues, that people want to take action on this stuff. And when you learn about what's happening on your public lands, it's like, oh yeah, this is not in the public good. How can I change this? So it doesn't feel like a hard ask. And I think we have been doing what we can to put in the work and kind of build this consciousness in our region about the importance of wildlands. And I think we'll just see this work kind of pay off and build as we go in the months and years to come. Because once you learn about this stuff, it's not too hard to continue to move from one campaign to the next as they come. Hopefully we'll be moving from fewer reactive campaigns, like trying to stop a misguided project, and more proactive campaigns, like trying to create these wildlands designations for our state lands and trying to better, more permanently protect our national forest lands. And then the only other thing I'd say about like how we're doing this, working with volunteers, is that we are really building on the work that's been happening for many decades across New England and beyond to push for wildlands. Like what we're calling for now is not radical or new. You know, there was an excellent book published in 2001 specifically focused on how can we rewild the Northeast and establish big wild areas. We know that people have been calling for this stuff for decades before that. The Wilderness Act was passed in 1964. More recently, E.O. Wilson, you know, really popularized the idea of a half earth, of preserving half the earth so all of us can survive, and that setting aside half the earth for nature, basically. And that's kind of the bare minimum, and that's what we're working with. And that's just kind of talking about the mainstream kind of Anglo-American ways of talking about wilderness. And we know that all the native people in our region, the original stewards and inhabitants of this area, have stewarded and honored the natural and more than human world here for millennia before us. And we can also build on that. So we're not just kind of pulling this out of thin air. There's a robust tradition of advocating for nature and wild places. And we're hoping to just kind of wake people up to that.
Chris, what I like to think of is that, you know, humans have been around for hundreds of thousands of years. And during that entire prehistory, before the, you know, Industrial Revolution or the modern age, we lived in wilderness. We lived in nature. We were a part of nature. We lived in nature. And it's only for the last few hundred years, which is just a blip in ecological time or geologic time, especially, but just for the last few hundred years that we've been gone off the track and we're living in this artificial world. Now it's a plastic world full of PFAS and all kinds of other man-made horrors, but it's a very short time period that we've been living in this, and yet this theory or this concept of shifting baseline for people that are being born now, this is what they think is normal, but it is so abnormal. It's completely off the chart. And so, like E.O. Wilson said, we have to get back to where we came from, because that's where our genetic programming and our ecological understanding exists, is actually in a wild state. As Henry David Thoreau said, in wildness is the preservation of the world. And we need to reclaim that and rewild ourselves. And also we need to rewild all of the land around us and nature. And setting aside half of it, to me, that is not radical. That's a compromise. That's saying right there, you're willing to let go of 50%. But there's 50% that we have to draw a line and defend. And, you know, maybe I'm sounding like an Earth First, an old Earth First radical, but, you know, that's a concept that we need to understand is in our genes. It is in our deep history, and we're currently living in an aberration, and it has no real relationship to what we're supposed to be doing. It's an artifact. It's a cultural construct that we just we're not aware of, but we need to, like you said, raise that level of awareness with people. So again, for folks listening, how do they like plug in? How do they get involved? And what kinds of activities do you have right now that people can join Standing Trees? How do they do that? And for full disclosure purposes, I'll say that I'm a monthly supporter of Standing Trees, and I have been for a while, because I believe in your mission. I believe what you're doing. And, you know, I'm retired. I'm on a fixed income. But I want to, instead of going out and buying coffee at Starbucks, I want to instead send that small amount of money to Standing Trees every month to ensure that you can keep doing the work that you're doing. So how do folks do something like that?
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. I can let you know all the ways you can get involved with Standing Trees. First, I did want to just briefly, if I could, back up a little and just talk about the federal level context for what we're facing right now, because I think it is really important to keep in mind, and a lot of us are kind of reeling from what's coming from Trump and his cronies and kind of asking what we can be doing in this moment. And it's such a central context for kind of the history of where we're at. And there's been these calls to preserve half the earth or rewild our landscape for a long time. And they're only more urgent than ever. Like, we know the climate and biodiversity crises are accelerating. And then the things that are coming from the federal level only stand to make that so much worse. So really, really briefly, I just wanted to kind of tune people into what's happening at the federal level. And some highlights as far as really terrible things that are going on are, we're seeing right now the Trump administration is in the process of trying to totally gut NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. So that is the act that allows all of us to make comments on when there's a logging plan or a plan to drill or mine on public lands. It allows us to speak up and gives us a framework within to do that. And then also creates a process by which we can hold our public agencies accountable to the public good in court after the fact if they don't make the right decision. So there's that. Similarly, the Trump administration is trying to gut the Endangered Species Act. They're also trying to rescind the roadless area conservation rule, which is probably, it's very imperfect, but one of the greatest conservation achievements of this century was passed in the last days of Clinton in 2001, after 1.6 million public comments, mostly supporting it. And this protects kind of many of the most iconic and wild places we have left in the country on our public lands, including about 260,000 acres in the White and Green Mountain National Forests. And that includes kind of many of the famous vistas you look out and see in the Whites, like most of the ridgelands, the Kinsmans, Moosilauk, the area around the Kinkamagus Highway, the Carter Mariah Range, you know, the Pilot Ranges north of the main bulk of the White Mountains, the list goes on. And these are the areas that, if the Trump administration gets their way, will be on the chopping block. So I just wanted to highlight some of those. There's many others. We're seeing executive orders that kind of promote a bogus emergency of not having enough timber and calling for more timber production. This was echoed in mandated increases in public lands logging in the reconciliation bill, the budget bill that passed this summer, which was a disaster for every other issue as well. But public lands were totally attacked in that bill as well. So these are some of the things we're seeing. And if you're kind of questioning, oh, when's a good time to step up? Now's the time. And some ways to get involved with the movement for wild public lands here in New England. We are, at Standing Trees, we totally depend on our volunteers, and volunteers are kind of the lifeblood of what we do. So they're is no way too big or too small to get involved with us in that regard. And the easiest way to do that is you can go to our website and under the Get Involved tab, if you scroll down a little bit, there's a volunteer signup form, and you can kind of indicate if you have a specific preference for anything you'd like to do. And that's everything from helping plan an event or do a little bit of online organizing to adopting a public forest near you and keeping tabs on it to doing either computer-based or field research with us. We can always make use of any specific skills you have, something like graphic design or photo or web design, all that. There's really any way you feel called or any skills you have and want to get involved, we can make that work. So I'd encourage you to check out that volunteer signup form on our website at standingtrees.org. And you can also sign up for our email list if you want to just stay informed and get oriented to the work before diving in. And also, like Glenn said, Glenn, we're grateful for your support. And we do depend on people's financial support to keep us going, keep us the little organization that we are going. And our membership starts at $1 a month. So it's really, I am also, haven't been made of money in my life so far, but I try to support organizations like this when I can. And we intentionally made our membership start at $1 so that anyone can be a Standing Trees quote unquote member at whatever level you choose. And then some other timely action steps and ways you can get involved. One really exciting one is that I'd encourage everyone to save the date for Saturday, September 27th. We're planning a public lands day of action with a bunch of allied conservation and environmental groups. It's going to be held somewhere in the Connecticut River Valley in western Massachusetts, probably in the town of Great Falls. And this is going to be a day filled with, there'll be speakers, food, art, and we're planning workshops both about public lands and wildlands issues and then advocacy workshops so you can dive in about specific ways to take action and learn about specific things that are going on, whether that's state wildlands pushes or how to even navigate the federal level language and planning for public lands logging, all the and everything in between. So that should be a really fun in-person way to gather with your fellow wildlands advocates and kind of make a big public showing for public lands on National Public Lands Day, September 27th. And again, probably in Western Massachusetts, we will have details on the exact location soon up on our website. Another thing, if you want to join us for an in-person event, I'd encourage you to join us on August 23rd at Lake Tarleton. We'll be canoeing on this beautiful lake in the Western White Mountains and kind of taking in this place that's threatened with 700 acres of logging right around its shores and getting guided by some local folks who live there and have fought for this place's protection for decades. And then those are the things that I have most on my mind as far as getting involved. I'd also encourage you all to stay tuned about the roadless rule. As I mentioned, the Trump administration is doing their best to rescind the roadless rule, this kind of landmark conservation achievement that protected 58 and a half million, still does in this moment, protect 58 and a half million acres of our wildest public lands from logging and road building. They're trying to rescind it in a quote unquote sprint, so as quickly as they can. We expect the comment period to open soon on that, and we'll definitely be trying to make as big a push as we can to generate comments in opposition to rescinding this rule and saying that, in fact, we need to go further and protect roadless areas more than ever. And one way, another way we can protect roadless areas is by asking our congresspeople to co-sponsor ROCA, which is the Roadless Areas Conservation Act. So right now, roadless areas are protected by a rule, and that's why the Trump administration can do their best to rescind it. But if it was protected by a law, by an act, then it would be much harder to undo. And there is growing momentum to finally make this happen. And the kind of complacency around roadless areas has vanished because we're seeing them actively try to get dismantled now. So if you live in New Hampshire, it's critical for you to contact both your senators and your rep to ask them to co-sponsor ROCA. Again, that's the Roadless Areas Conservation Act. If you live in Massachusetts, both of your senators have already done so. You can thank them. But if you are in any rep district that's not Jim McGovern's, it'd be really important to contact your reps and ask them to co-sponsor RACA. And if you're a Vermont resident, our delegation in Vermont has signed up to co-sponsor RACA. And we've seen that it's just because of people have already been in touch with them about that. And we know they're hearing from us. So this kind of just goes to show that how deeply imperfect the system is, it is responsive to our input when we chime in consistently. And that's a kind of immediate low-hanging ask we can make to our delegation.
Well, that is an excellent list of opportunities. And on the Enviro Show, we're all about activism. We try to get people activated and motivated to make a difference, because nothing happens without people power. And we really need to be organized. And so I'm grateful for Standing Trees to be filling the void really left behind by kind of, I'd say, decades of sort of neglect in the Northeast when it came to forest protection. I was involved many years ago with some groups that just kind of faded away, and Standing Trees has stood up and come in to fill that gap. And so I'm really grateful for your organization, and you and Zach especially, and all the volunteers that you work with. So I just want to give you a big EnviroShow thanks for all the great work that you're doing. And I hope our listeners will consider getting involved and supporting Standing Trees. And Chris, thanks for being on the show. Keep up the great work. And I hope to see you, I think it's the 23rd, up there at Lake Tarleton.
Yeah, thank you so much, Glenn. And thanks again for the decades of work that you have contributed to that we're building on now. It really is a movement across time and across our whole region that is going to make this stuff happen. And I hope to see you and some of your listeners in person at either August 23rd, we'll be paddling on Lake Tarleton, or join us on September 27th in Western Mass for Public Lands Day of Action.
All right, we'll leave it there. Chris Gish from Standing Trees, thanks so much.
Thank you, Glenn.
Okay, we're back.
There are very few environmental groups that I feel are doing honest work, and Standing Trees is one of them. It's a very grassroots. I was there at the inception of the group, and it is entirely grassroots. And it's a group that I support. So listeners, if you're looking for a group that is really doing outstanding work in forest protection, I can't recommend Standing Trees highly enough.
Very, very good. That's about it. I can't think of anything else other than listen to your mother.
Yeah, remember to listen to your mother, okay?
That's important. And this is Theo saying adios.
Hey, and this is Glenn Ayers. And I say it at the end of every show, but now more than ever, folks need to get involved, get active, join with other folks, like-minded people. And that's what makes a difference, is by organizing and activating. So do it now, and you won't be crying later. So this is Glenn Ayers. Take care. Get out in nature. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.